Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And good afternoon and welcome to Iceman Insights, starring the one and only senior writer of IcemanManiacs.com and vice president of, what are you vice president of?
Offbeat Shenanigans.
Offbeat Shenanigans. You had another title too. I just...
Webmaster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Senior writer, webmaster, and vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans.
Do we want to keep this?
Yes, yes.
Okay, Michael Shockley.
It's another example of how wonderfully prepared you are.
It's another example how you carry 95% of this show. So here we are once again. In my opinion, I'll take a 2-2 weekend like that anytime we can get it. I mean, it looked horrible with Alan York, his first game back. Just get shelled last Wednesday in Cincy, but he stands on his head Sunday night. We get 2-2 and 500 hockey for the club.
Yeah, and I don't think you can read too much into those first two games in Cincinnati. You know, they're road games. They're against a good team. You still got guys trying to get to know each other. That's just going to happen with all the turnover and everything, especially with York getting shelled in his first game. That's just rust. You know, when you haven't played a game that means anything in, what, 8-9 months? And then you come back, and basically the day after coming off the IR, you're asked to start and play a game. That's going to happen. And I think we saw on Sunday that he's definitely got the skill to succeed. I mean, you don't make it to the NHL in your rookie professional season without having talent. And, you know, he may still be a little rusty here and there, and he may not look totally orthodox. He kind of has an odd style because he's very slow moving. He doesn't zip from post to post real fast. And when he goes down, he doesn't get right back up. But obviously that's his style, and it works for him.
Nothing against Terry Ficarelli. Let me make sure I get that out there. But I listen to the games. I always listen to the away broadcaster because I want to hear what the away team perspective is of the Evansville Icemen.
Good excuse.
It is not an excuse. It's the truth. And they had nothing but praise for York. He got shelled in that game. They talked about a little bit that the K-Wings were a little... Oh, no, sorry, Walleye. Here we go again.
Boy.
I watched
what
the K-Wings.
What are we, 2 minutes in?
Oh, man, 2:30.
That's the
two screw-ups already.
It's the Iceman Insights drinking game. Yeah. Every time Benigni screws up, take a swig.
Wow.
We'll have alcohol poisoning before we get to Shockers Hockey Rocks on the week.
But against Toledo, you know, they had the bus legs. They're a little disappointed with their first period. They came charging back, and York just backstopped that club into another victory for us.
Yeah, yeah, he played well for a guy in his second game back and coming off of the rather ugly debut. You know, there's a lot to be said. Goalies have to be like closers in baseball. That if you have a bad outing, you have to be able to turn the page, put it behind you, and move on. And that was something that plagued Pierre-Olivier Pelletier big time, was that it wasn't even just putting a bad game behind him. If he gave up one bad goal, he was done the rest of the game. And to be a successful goalie in professional hockey, you have to be able to take bad goals, bad games, and just forget about it. You have to have that etch-a-sketch memory, so to speak, that you just shake your head and you move on. And York proved that he could do that because it was an ugly debut in Cincinnati, and then he turned around and played well on Sunday and was a big part of the reason why we won that game.
Speaking of a goaltender like that, Grant Fuhr in the Hockey Hall of Fame is the best goalie that I've ever seen do that. I mean, you would watch him play, especially I was a Leaf fan, Red Wing fan living up in Detroit. We're trying to knock off Edmonton Oilers, and we'd be up 3-1. You know, and Edmonton would come charging back, and it would be 4-3, and we tie it up again. And he could always shake it off. And the last 8 minutes of the game, if he had a one goal lead, 8 minutes to go, you weren't scoring. I mean, he could shut that door. No matter how he played, 50 minutes into the game, 52 minutes into the game, all he needed was a one goal lead at the end of it, and he shut it all down. And and he got into the Hockey Hall of Fame. His numbers probably don't look great. You know, he didn't have Dominic Hasek shutouts all the time, but he was able to always stop the puck to get that win.
Right, and so much of successful goaltending is being able to bring your A game in crunch time. And the Icemen got that both home games this weekend because they were both similar in that on Saturday, Robin Dorr, who played a very good game on Saturday, the Icemen went up 3-0, gave up a couple of odd goals down the stretch where there were shots from the point and he got a piece of them and they got behind him and it ultimately ended up in the net. But he still shook that off and managed to prevail and keep the win. And the same thing on Sunday. York played well down the stretch. The team was back on their feet. It looked like for the last 10 minutes of the game on Sunday, they were playing not to lose, which is the quickest way to lose. And it looked like an extended power play, basically, for Toledo. But York played well, and ultimately that's the difference in the game, is when you've got goalies that may give up a weak goal here or there or a goal in crunch time, but they don't let it unravel, and they stick with it and end up keeping the win.
6-8, the Icemen go through November. They're 2-0 to start December, and I'm worried about my preseason prediction of them ending up in the bottom third of the lineup. This team is with every... First of all, 9 players missing out of a roster of 16 skaters. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
And to look at Rich Crom, this coaching staff, and you got to include the whole coaching staff. You know, the captains, Brian Patafi, Ben Dickinson, with the chiropractic stuff. But this team is coming to play every night. And part of me wonders how this team even wins. But you just see they're... Even as the new players come in with trades and roster movements and everything else, they're still playing better hockey than they have all season long. It's getting more consistent, and they're putting up points.
Well, and I think part of it is just guys are desperate to make an impression. And when you have this much roster movement and you bring new guys in that get that chance, all they're looking for is an opportunity, and they want to make the best of it. And if you have a guy like a Sean Whitney or a Carlo Fanucci, they're an unproven rookie, they bounce around, they're already on their third team this season. When they get that chance and they're out there on the ice, they want to make everyone notice that they can play at this level. Because, you know, if you get dropped from your third team in the first 2 months of your rookie season, that doesn't look exactly wonderful on your hockey resume.
Yeah,
So when you get guys that are young and hungry and they come in there, they really want to prove themselves. And that goes a long way toward maybe making... I don't want to say a less talented roster, but just a less proven roster. Guys that are plugged in the heat of the moment when you just have to have warm bodies, when you may just be looking to stem the tide, they actually come in and play well because they want to prove themselves, and they want to, even if they're not going to stick around here long term, they want to earn themselves a long term job somewhere. And I think that it's almost desperation on an individual level that helps feed the desperation of a team that really needs chemistry and wins right now. And we saw over the weekend, I think you give guys a chance, and the worst thing for the opposition is to have a team that really has nothing to lose. Their backs are against the wall, and they're playing with house money, basically. Because the way that the season has started and the way the Icemen are so injured, nobody's expecting anything of them. And the worst team to face is a team with nothing to lose.
Yeah, and one that you take a little bit lightly, too. They lose the 2 games Wednesday and Friday in Cincy. They come back home. Finally, the home ice advantage begins to work for us. And this is something I want to look at over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years as the schedule gets more standardized throughout the league. But, man, if we are home and teams are coming in on a 4-hour, 8-hour bus trip, we're going to make a lot of points. I can see us going, what do we have, like 36 home games every year? I mean, I could see this team with a little bit of help from the schedule going 28-8 in some seasons, because you can't make that trip and then expect to be at your A game. And if we're sitting around waiting, I mean, you saw it against Kalamazoo. It was interesting that we played Cincy and Toledo played Kalamazoo on Friday night, and then everyone rotated.
Yeah.
Toledo came to Cincy while Kalamazoo came to us, and then Toledo came in and Kalamazoo went back to Cincy. So everyone played four games in 5 days and 3-3.
It's this weird hockey square dance thing going on.
But you saw both games where both teams came out flat. The Icemen jumped ahead. We got a couple of the nice hockey god breaks finally on home ice, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and breaks on a home ice means actual a break in the flow of the game, not a break as far as someone's bone breaking, which has been happening more often lately than anything.
But I can't remember, was it Nathan Moon? Bolio in front of the net, first goal. It was either the first or second goal Saturday night, and he just threw it towards the net from behind the goal line. It hit the goalie wrong and ends up in the net, and it's like, man, we've seen that kill us all, you know, through October, and finally it's starting to even out a little bit.
And that happened on Sunday too. The third goal, which ultimately ended up being the game winner, was early in the third period. Dylan Clark was skating into the zone. He gained the blue line and was maybe 4 or 5 feet into the zone and just dumped it on net. It wasn't a hard shot. It wasn't where he wasn't even really trying to score, I don't think. It was just kind of a put it on net, see what happens, maybe even change lines. And it short hopped a few feet in front of the goalie and hopped over and into the net. And that's the kind of bounces and the kind of fortunate things that have not been happening for the Icemen this season. But they were the beneficiaries of a good bounce for once on Sunday, and it proved to be the difference.
So did you need to wrap up anything else here? Wednesday, Friday losses, Saturday, Sunday wins. You got all kinds of stuff written down on this piece of paper. I was trying to set you up, but in my setup, I led you astray down an avenue that we hadn't written down.
Well, that's what we do. We've established very well. That's what we do here. We have a plan, and then we deviate from it, and we somehow wander our way back to the plan.
Yeah,
that's how we end up doing an hour and 5 minutes every week when we plan to do a half hour.
Iceman Insights on Amusement Park Radio. You can guarantee tangents and redactions every week.
Yeah, I thought Sunday there were a couple things that were worth noting. I enjoyed one of the funny little things. We've talked about stop and smell the roses in the midst of a bad season. On Sunday, there were a couple of Toledo players in the penalty box, and one of the Icemen fans, I couldn't tell who it was from the press box, but ran down and banged on the glass on the back of the penalty box and just heckled the daylights out of the players that were in there for about 15, 20 seconds. And then he wanders off. And about 5 seconds later, some other fan runs over to the box, slams on the back of the glass one time and goes, "What he said," and then walks off. I don't know who either of the people were, but I thought that was just one of those funny little organic moments that fans can add to the fun of a game. But the other thing I wanted to mention was Sunday, we did have a Courier and Press writer there, and I believe that was the first time that we've had a win with the Courier and Press there this season, so the curse is broken, yay. But Jonathan Lintner was there on Sunday, and he, I've said before, he asked good questions. He's new to hockey, but he asked good questions, and he's starting to pick up the game, too. He was watching the game, and the first period on Sunday was really quiet. There was very few whistles and not many penalties, and it was kind of a feeling out process. And he said something along the lines of, "It seems like every time I'm here, they start out slow, and there's just not a whole lot going on, and then at some point all hell breaks loose." Well, sure enough, in the second period, it got really chippy, and there was some near fights, and I said, "You're right." And he said, "Yeah, I'm starting to pick up on this stuff. You know, hockey is a thinking man's game," kind of just off the cuff. And I said, "Yeah, the thinking about hockey is, I think I'm going to kick your butt." And then the other guy's like, "No, I think I'm going to kick your butt." But yeah, I just wanted to say I'm glad the Courier was there on Sunday. They didn't have anyone out there Saturday because basketball takes precedence, as we've talked about. They were covering college and high school hoops,
and that's never going to change. We are never going to, 20 years from now, but we're old and gray, and on our 1,000th episode of Iceman Insights right here on 96.9 The Wire.
Smooth.
It was smooth until you threw me off, but 20 years from now, there will still be basketball will still be number one thing in the Courier Press. It's just the way it is.
So I wasn't surprised at all that they didn't have anyone there on Saturday, but they did have someone there on Sunday. It was a good article. It was above the fold with a picture, and it was a good positive article. And we've said it before, but I think people just, whenever there's an article, comment on it, read it on the website. That way they see the stats that proves that the Icemen attract eyeballs. And maybe over time we can make some headway. But the anti-courier just hatred is not going to get us anywhere. We need the courier to be an ally. So whenever there is an article, if there isn't an article, it's fine to not be happy about it. But don't fly off the handle. Wait for when there is an article, read it, comment on it, and maybe we'll get somewhere over time. But it was a good article on Sunday, and thankfully they were actually there for a win for once. So we didn't get front page coverage of an ugly 5-goal loss, which has happened a couple times this season. Yeah. So it was interesting on this weekend. It was crazy busy downtown because Saturday night and Sunday, the Evansville Philharmonic had their Christmas show at the Victory. And there were also events both nights at the center. There was a Chris Young concert on Saturday, and Mannheim Steamrollers Christmas concert was on Sunday. So it was a real test of the parking and the traffic flow and everything. And you know, I get there early and I leave late, so I don't really see it. But I didn't see any comments online about any real problems. You know,
no,
you may have to spend a little more time finding a parking spot, but no big issues.
I did not have to come early, and I left right when the game was over, and the police had a couple of the roads shut down in certain directions, but no, all the traffic moved pretty well. So I thought it worked out just great. And I think the Chris Young concert probably started a half an hour or so after. So you saw all the Iceman fans showing up going in, and then you saw another whole group coming in for parking and stuff over on the center side.
It was this weird amalgamation of people, because you've got Iceman fans wearing hockey jerseys, and then you've got the EPO people wearing suits and ties, and then you've got a bunch of flannel shirts and cowboy boots going to the Chris Young concert. So it was this odd mishmash of every kind of person you could imagine in Evansville. But I was glad that everything, all those events came and went, and there weren't any major issues, so that was good. But on the ice, I think something to take out of the weekend's games is we are seeing the real coming of age of Josh Beaulieu. He is turning into a legitimate, solid player at this level, which I think last year there was some question of, well, how much was it really him and how much was it just that he was on Todd Robinson's line for most of the year? And I think now with Todd out, we're seeing that Beaulieu is a legitimate player on his own. He doesn't have to be with someone in particular in order to produce. He's got 17 points in his last 17 games. So he's
become a stud, and it's just, again, we've talked about it before, Rich Kram, he's a teacher. Mm-hmm. And if you want to learn about hockey, he will teach you. And I remember the first year of the CHL when the Icemen were at Swander, and they were mired in last place. The team didn't have a lot of talent. And after practice, he's out there with Brian Bisek, and they're working on picking the puck up off the boards, like on the hard wraparound. Mm-hmm. And Bisek is just going over it for 45 minutes after practice. Bisek is skating into the zone while Rich Kram fires it around the boards for him to pick it up off the boards. And that's what Rich Kram will do. He will make you a 100% all-rounded hockey player if you want to invest the time into doing it.
Yeah, and I think people need to understand, too, you can't win games except within the frame of the game, but you can lose games during the offseason, during practices. There's so much of it that happens before the puck even drops for an actual game that determines whether or not that team is going to be able to compete. And there's so many little things like that that happen off the ice that the average fan probably doesn't see or doesn't even necessarily want to think about. They see what happens during the game and base all their opinions based on that. But that's really short-sighted, because there's so much more that goes into it that, you know, Rich Kram is a full-time worker. It's not like he shows up for the game and then goes home. There's a heck of a lot that he does otherwise that really determines how this team does. It's not just about showing up to the Ford Center for every game.
Speaking of the coach and general manager, you want to get into your injuries and transactions?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of, man, it's just ridiculous. We are now 23 games into the season. We're up to 108 man games lost. And it's not just here either. I also found out Peoria is up to 77 man games lost. So you figure between the two of them, we're already pushing 200 total games lost to injury, which is just ridiculous. We're already up to 35 different players have suited up. Keep in mind, only 18 can dress for a given game. The injury list at this point is so long that people might not know, but normally the injured players will sit up in one of the media boxes, one of the unused broadcasting boxes, because we don't have TV. So usually one of those TV boxes in the press row is where the injured players will go sit. There's usually one, two, maybe three. There are so many injured players right now that they can't fit in there. On Sunday, all of the injured players, and I'm talking 8-10 guys, were sitting in Section 219 just hanging out watching the game. So there's if anybody wanted to meet a bunch of Icemen, you could have gone up to Section 219 and there would have been a whole bunch of guys sitting there in suits and ties and watching the game. It's just ridiculous what this team has gone through. But I heard an interesting quote, I think, last week on ESPN. Somebody was talking about in football that the best ability is availability. I thought that's an interesting play on words, but it's also very applicable to the Icemen because it doesn't matter how many talented guys you have at your disposal. If they're hurt, they can't help you.
Yeah. True.
And it's also when guys are healthy, then it also applies to discipline. And if you're on the ice and you take stupid penalties and you put yourself in the penalty box, you're not available anymore. So it doesn't matter how good you are. If you're sitting there serving a penalty, you're hurting your team. So that's I thought that was an interesting quote, but it certainly applies to the Icemen. So to kind of wrap things up, as the time of this recording, Aaron Jens and Anton Blomqvist were shifted from reserve to IR in the past week. Jesse Perrin did come off of the IR, and he looked really good.
Yes, he did.
I don't remember him being quite so aggressive before he got hurt, but boy, he looked fantastic over the weekend. And I believe, we don't know of any, I don't think we had any new injuries this week, which I think is the first time in about a month and a half that's been the case.
It's unbelievable.
But in some good news, I talked to Brian Patafi on Saturday, and he said that Todd Robinson's MCL injury is not a tear, it's only a strain. And he said it's tightening up nicely, and he could actually be back as soon as this week, possibly. So that's good. He's not out as long as originally feared. Also, Trent Vogelhuber's shoulder injury is improving, and he may also be able to return within the next week or two. So those are a couple of good things. The Blomqvist injury, to put a pin on that, we had heard that he had been dealing with some hip and back issues, which is the case, but those are getting better. The reason he's really out is he suffered a concussion on November 18th against Reading. So he's going to be out for who knows how long with concussions, you never know. Other good news, though, Oliver Gabriel is now off of crutches. He's in a walking boot. I saw him wandering around the rink over the weekend. So he's still a little ways off, but at least he's making progress. And in case anyone was wondering, Tyler Shelast was moved to the reserve list, but he is not hurt. That was just a healthy move to make room for other guys. So I believe that's all the injury updates. The transactions we had, Paul Karpovich was called up to Peoria over the weekend as an emergency backup. The flu was going around their locker room, and neither of the goalies had it, but they were wondering if one of them might get it, and if they did, they wanted to have him on call. I don't know that he actually left town. I think he basically stayed here on call, and in the event of one of them starts throwing up in the locker room, they'd call him and say, drive up to Peoria right now. So I think he hasn't actually been returned to our roster yet, but he will be soon, I'm sure. We did get Cody Beach back. He was sent back down before the weekend, and then after the weekend, Stefan Della Rovere was called up.
That was coming. Boy, he was a beauty.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cool watching him
play.
He's
good. He's one of those guys that he may not light the scoreboard up right away. He only had 1 point in his four games here, but he passes the eyeball test. You sit and watch him, and it's like, oh, boy, he's fun to watch. He is dynamic. So, yeah, it's a shame that he got called up, but it didn't exactly surprise anyone.
No, and it's just cool. You know, this is the best part of being affiliated is you get someone to come down and rehab like this, so you get to see a guy that's won gold at a World Junior, you know. You get to see that kind of credibility, even if it's for a week.
Right.
So that's why you got to have your season tickets and always be ready to go to the arena so that you get a chance to see these guys once or twice. Pretty soon we'll be talking about him playing for the Blues.
Yeah. The good news is, even though Della Rovere got called up, we did finally get a couple of new reinforcements from Peoria. They're starting to get healthier. On Monday, they sent down a couple of guys that were second-round draft picks of the Blues. Defenseman Brett Ponich was a 2009 pick, and winger Sebastian Wanstrom was a 2010 pick. Ponich is huge. He is 6'7" and 225 pounds. He's kind of been described as a poor man's Hal Gill, which is not necessarily a bad thing to say, because no. Hal Gill is a very serviceable NHL defenseman.
Still
Ponich,
is.
Yeah. Ponich is not a big offensive kind of guy. He's more of a stay-at-home defenseman, which this team could certainly use.
Yep.
So he could be a very nice addition. This is his second pro year. Not only is he a stay-at-home demon, but he's also apparently very good on the PK, which with that kind of reach, you would expect him to be.
Yeah, and that's what Hal Gill's done. I don't think Hal Gill's played the power play.
Yeah, but he's
in 10 seasons.
Right.
But he's always
but
a
he's
part
a
of
PK
that number
guy.
One PK,
yeah.
Yep.
And he's also Ponich, I think, is also probably a good character guy. He was actually the captain of the Portland Winterhawks when he was playing junior in the Western Hockey League. So hopefully he'll be a good addition. He's not going to light up the scoreboard, but he should do a lot of things off of the scoreboard that show up that pass the eyeball test, quote unquote.
And he should fill in for Blomqvist,
right,
who was that big heavy presence back in there.
Yep. And then Wanstrom is another Swede. We keep attracting Swedes. He's not overly big. He's 6'1".
Is that a Jennifer Watt thing?
I don't know. It's part her and part Steven Rickard. He loves the Swedes,
oh,
too. But yeah, he's 6'1", 180. He's a rookie. He's actually spent the last 3 years in the Swedish Elite League. He only had 3 points in 16 games with Peoria so far this year, but he's supposed to be a speedy, skilled guy. I talked to Dave and Minnie and the Riverman beat writer for the Peoria Journal Star, and he said the guy is not overly defensive, as would be expected from the European style of forward, but he said he is a solid offensive player, and he's got some dynamic talent, so it'll be interesting to see what he can do. He may be a defensive liability here and there, but if he can maybe light things up on the offensive end, you can overlook some of the defensive shortcomings. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. We're now over the 20-man limit for the active roster as of when we're recording this, so something's got to give. Either someone will be moved to IR, or someone's going to be cut, or I don't know what's going to happen, but I was thinking maybe we might see Derek Foam return to Huntsville in the SPHL, and I wouldn't be shocked if Tyler Shelast gets cut, just because he's been kind of the odd man out. Anytime they've had to put someone healthy on reserve, he seems to be the guy that's the first one that gets pegged for that. So
yeah, and then few weeks back when Crom really shook up the team with dressing the 8D and benching a couple of wingers, I believe he was one and Gender.
Yeah.
So,
but and the good thing is, since that Gender's starting to heat up, he's still not perhaps living up to the expectations, but he's got 8 points in his last 10 games, so he's starting to get it going a little bit, which if he really lives up to the expectations, then that's going to go a long way in helping this team. He did have a funny moment on Sunday, though. With the Icemen were on the power play, and I think it was Matt Jens was at the point. He was winding up for a shot, and Gender was over on the off wing, and he called for the pass. Jens passed up the shot, passes over to Gender, and he completely whiffs on the one-timer. Which, that's just one of those goofy things that happens over the course of a game sometime. But I think in hockey circles, that's known as pulling a Bonini, is it not?
I believe it is.
Okay, that's why
he Bonini'd it.
I heard that. I just wanted to make sure.
And we have some new additions.
Yeah, last week before after we recorded our show before the games, Dylan Clark was signed off waivers from South Carolina. He's in his second year. He only had 3 points in 16 games with South Carolina this season. But last year, in his rookie year, he played with Tulsa in the CHL, and he had 64 points in 66 games. And you don't pile up points like that without having some talent. So the slow start this year, maybe you can just pass off as, you know, wrong situation or something just didn't click.
Lack of playing time.
Yeah.
You lose a line mate.
Right. But he came in, and he looked good so far. He was centering a line with Beaulieu and Gender, and he's got 4 points in 3 games so far. And sometimes a change of scenery is all a young guy needs to get going. And so far, he's looked good, and that could end up being a really nice addition that kind of, in the midst of all these other roster moves, may have gotten lost a little bit. But that could be a key move going forward. And the good thing is, we didn't have to give up anything. All these other guys that we acquired were for future considerations, and South Carolina had waived him. And I talked to the ECHL communications department to confirm, because every league's waiver system is different. But in the E, when a player is waived, you don't owe a team anything if you sign him. So basically, when they waive a player, he's a free agent. It's just that if multiple teams want him, the team lowest in the standings gets him. But otherwise, we don't owe the Stingrays anything for him. So that could be a really nice thing. Yep. And we didn't have to give up anything to get him. It's just finding a roster spot for him, which at the time was not a problem. But I think he's definitely done enough in 3 games to warrant sticking around for a while and see if maybe that line with Beaulieu and Gender can stay hot and keep it up. And that could be a really nice addition.
How many times did we see Tulsa last year? Did we see them much?
I think we only saw them once or twice. Okay. We never played them much, unfortunately, because
they're in the West.
They weren't very good. But yeah, we very rarely saw them. It was them in Wichita we'd see two or three times total, and maybe one here or two there or something like that. But
got it. It's just because Tulsa didn't jump off of my memory.
Right.
Not like Brandon Marino and Eric Giosa and those guys that we saw in Quad City.
Yeah,
and
I don't remember seeing him play, but, you know, like I said, 64 points in 66 games, that's better numbers than Brian Bisek had.
Yeah.
So the kid obviously has talent. I think we've seen so far in two games that maybe moving here from South Carolina is exactly what he needed. The other addition was Alan York, as we mentioned before. He had spent the entire season on the IR. I never did hear what his injury was. I don't think the Blue Jackets ever really said. But with goalies, you never know. It could have been a groin or some sort of leg injury that prevented him from moving around the way he needed to.
Or the posts were talking to him too loud.
Yeah. Yeah, he took one too many pucks to the head. The thing about York is, a lot of people were wondering, well, how long is he going to be here? Is this just a rehab stint, or are we going to have him for a while, or what's going to go on? And I think it's probably going to be a long-term deal because Springfield still has Curtis McElhaney and Paul Dayton in net up in the A, and I don't see either of them coming down. McElhaney's been their starter, and he's playing really well. He's started 16 games. He's got a 185 goals against and a 940 save percentage. He also has 5 shutouts. Which, here we are in the first week of December, that already ties Springfield's club record for a season. So he's not going anywhere. Dayton is, like York, a young prospect in net that they're really high on, and while he's not playing a lot, he's only played in 5 games, he's got really good numbers too. His goals against is 222, and he's got a 930 save percentage. So it's not like he's out of place up there. So I think we very well could see York for the long term. The one thing that could mean he may not be here long term is if they decide they want Dayton to get more work. So they might flip-flop the two of them maybe more than once over the course of the season, keep York down here, let him get some work, and then call him up and send Dayton down and let him get some work, and maybe they could do a rotation, sort of. But I think one way or the other, as long as all three of those guys are healthy, either Dayton or York will be here for the rest of the season, which means going forward, what do the Icemen do with their goaltender situation?
Yep.
I don't think Paul Karpovich is going anywhere. He's an affiliate goaltender. Which means Rob Medore, unfortunately, is probably the odd man out. And then what happens with him? Do you just send him back to Charlotte and say, sorry, we don't have room for him anymore, you got to assign him to somebody else? Do we perhaps trade his ECHL contract rights to someone that we owe future considerations to complete one of those trades? I don't know. I don't know if we can even do that because he's Charlotte's property.
Right.
Anything to complete a trade as far as moving his rights would probably require their approval. And they may not want to do that. They may want to have the flexibility to send him wherever they want to send him. So I think we may see three goalies short term. You might see one move to reserve or IR. Someone might come down with a groin injury. But I don't think...
Well, we don't have any room on our IR anymore.
Well,
part of the problem we've had. That's why you see so much movement between the active roster, the reserve, and the IR, is the ECHL has some rules about how people can be put on the IR. So that's why the Iceman front office has had to do some juggling just to process all those transactions, so we can't really bury anyone.
I don't think there's a limit on how many guys can go on the IR, but you have to, once you're on there, you have to be on there for 21 days. So if you've got guys that are a little banged up but probably won't be out that long, you can't put them on the IR, or you're not going to have them as soon as they're able to come back. And also, the way the backdating works in the E is in other leagues, and I'm not sure how exactly the NHL does it, but a lot of times you can backdate to the day after the guy's last game. Well, the E allows you to backdate it either to the day after his last game played or 3 days prior to the day you're putting him on the IR, whichever is more recent. So if he hasn't played in 2 weeks and you decide, I need roster space, I got to put him on IR, you can't backdate it 2 weeks. You can only backdate it 3 days. So that also plays into it. With Todd Robinson, he's already missed 2 weeks of action. And if something happens and they decided they need to move him to IR, they couldn't backdate him 2 weeks. They can only backdate him 3 days, which means then you've got another 18 days from today, if they were to do that, before he could actually play. So that really plays into the flexibility. So I don't know what they're going to do, A, with the roster in general, with guys coming down from Peoria now. As Peoria gets healthy and we start to get healthy, then you're going to have 35 guys at your disposal and only 20 spots. So what are you going to do? And the goaltending situation, as much as I would love to see Rob Medore stick around, I just don't see how he's going to stick around. Because when you've got three goalies to choose from and two of them are property of your affiliates, he's just the one that's going to get cut. There's no way around it.
And three goalies stinks to understand from the coaching perspective. All your drills and your practicing and you're working on defensive zone and offensive zone, you've got one goalie in one net and one goalie in the other, and you flip-flop them back and forth. With a third goalie, you got one guy standing off to the side, and then you got to rotate him in, so your goalies don't even get a full practice anymore because you got to rotate the third goalie in, and then no one likes to sit. You never want to be a healthy scratch. You never want to be a reserve. And then for, you know, the one goalie, we've already been talking about how Crom likes to use the one-in-one system. One plays one game, the next plays the next. But then now you've got guys sitting out, a goalie not even sitting on the bench anymore. A goalie sits on the bench, he doesn't get any playing time unless there's an injury or a yank. And then you got a third guy in street clothes. It doesn't work for a hockey team to have three goalies on a club at this level.
Right, and goaltending is so mental. It's so much about that routine. And even if you're not the starting goaltender that night, at least if you're the backup, you go through warm-ups, you go through everything, you're in the locker room, you're on the bench during the game, at least you're somewhat in your normal routine. If you're that third guy who's sitting up in the press box, or in the Iceman's case, there's not room for you, so you sit in one of the general sections, that completely throws off your routine. And when your routine gets thrown off just a little bit as a goalie, when it's all about mental and focus, and you got to be on your A-game mentally as much as you are physically, it makes things very awkward. That's why I don't see people, they could keep three goalies long term. No, that's just not going to happen.
Now, our favorite segment, our best segment here on Iceman Insights. Shockers. Hockey. Rock Song of the Week.
Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week this week is a tribute to our friend Steven Rickard.
The man with the golden pipes.
Yes. This coming Monday, the 10th, is his birthday. I'm not going to say how old he is. If you want to find out, you can go on Facebook and friend him. But Steven's birthday is this coming Monday, and he loves the Arrogant Worms. And for people that don't know, I'm not talking about like eating egotistical grub worms. The Arrogant Worms are a Canadian comedy band, and I actually introduced everyone to them a couple weeks ago when I played I Pulled My Groin.
Indeed,
that's the Arrogant Worms as well.
That was a fantastic one.
Yeah. But the thing that people here know the Arrogant Worms from, they know some of their work even if they don't know the name. Because at Iceman games, when you hear that, "Please, Mr. Linesman, let the players fight," that's the Arrogant Worms. And that's a clip of a song, part of a song called "Me Like Hockey." You know, they are a Canadian comedy group, so about half of their material is either about Canadian life or hockey. So they have a song called "Me Like Hockey." It's a kind of a joking song about the knuckle draggers that love hockey. And in the midst of the song is this little breakdown where they say, "Please, Mr. Linesman, let the players fight." I had never actually heard that song played at a hockey game ever, but I knew the song. A friend of mine in college turned me on to the Arrogant Worms way back when, and I started playing that at the Iceman games, and everybody loved it, and I still have never heard it in any other hockey games anywhere else, but apparently it's an Evansville exclusive now, and everybody loves it. But in honor of Steven Rickard's birthday, this is from 1997, the Arrogant Worms, "Me Like Hockey."
We work hard 5 days a week, sweeping garbage from the street. Come home, not one book to read, not enough pictures for me see. Sit right down in favorite chair, wearing only underwear. Favorite night is Saturday night, 'cause me can watch hockey fights. Me like hockey! Me like hockey!
Me not like pro basketball, 'cause me short and they all tall. Baseball slow like Forrest Gump, except when Robbie spits on ump. WrestleMania not so great, me like to see Hulk Hogan skate. TV soccer not that hot, you play bad then you get shot. Me like hockey,
Me like hockey. Swedish players must be geeks, cause they still got unreal teeth. Not like Finnish players' names. What's a Teemu anyway? Russian's worse in history. Got stupid names like Valerie.
Me like Sergei Fedorov.
Me like Imre Petrov. Me like hockey.
Me like hockey. Hey.
Me like hockey.
We like hockey.
Please, Mr. Linesman, let the players fight. 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 Let them 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 fight. Let them
friends come over, put game on. Argue, then we lay bets down. Got bag of chips and case of Bud. Should last till end of first period. But Yankees, they win the World Cup. Me think they cheat, use Chloe Puck. Maybe if we want to winter, maybe we should play in winter. Me like hockey.
Me like hockey.
Me like hockey.
Me like hockey.
And we are back here on Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley, senior writer of IcemanManiacs.com, your one and only source for 24-hour Iceman information right there at your hands. There's nowhere else to go in Evansville or the Tri-State other than IcemanManiacs.com.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we have, I don't know that people really bounce around the site, but it's more than just a place to get these podcasts and a blog. There's a ton of static information, schedules and parking information and the arena seating layout and stuff. There's a lot of stuff that as a fan I would like to see on EvansvilleIcemen.com that's not there, so I put it up on IcemanManiacs.com.
I go to IcemanManiacs.com before every game because you always have some little insight or whatever else, even like referees, and you've done statistics on referees and who's called the most penalties against us. You've done that in the past, and yeah, who seems to call the least amount of penalties, et cetera, so you always have something applicable.
Yeah, and even if there's not stuff on the main page of the blog, click over to the Maniac message board, and there's always a lot of other stuff up there. You know, there'll be some little stuff here and there that I'll post on the message board that maybe isn't necessarily big enough to warrant its own blog post, but it'll still be somewhere for people to see.
Now, it's time for the Iceman Insight here on the amusement park to start throwing some people under the bus. And we've got to go right after the Ford Center.
Yeah, yeah. The fans might not know, but on Saturday before the first game post-circus, they had some issues getting the ice back down properly. And apparently, as of Saturday morning, the ice was still not as thick as it needed to be. They had to call in Ryan Mitchell, is an HVAC guy who serves as the ice tech specialist for Swander.
He's a really good guy. Is he? I know him from over there.
So apparently they had to call him in, and he had to...
Call him in, they had to employ him for the night.
Ah!
So it's yeah, the city had to spend some money.
Really?
To bail them out of a jam, yes.
That's good. Maybe if it costs them a little money, they'll figure out how to do this properly next time rather than wait too long to start putting the ice down and then have a mess on their hands that they have to clean up at the last minute. But yeah, once again, the ice having issues. Apparently they got the chiller valve that was broken before the circus fixed, but then they didn't bother to put the ice down in time to actually get it the way it needed to be before the first game after the circus.
I'm not even sure I buy the chiller problem.
Well, yeah, I don't know. All I know is there's issues that they need to fix. And it's not just about the ice. Over the weekend, people might have noticed at the Iceman Attack Twice end of the ice, the goal net was installed incorrectly. It was actually installed a few inches more than away from the boards than it was supposed to be. The back edge of the goalposts were actually at the front edge of the goal line, which is not how it's supposed to be. They're supposed to be lined up perfectly. So that's a problem. And then We keep having this problem of the doors in the corners opening up during play. The one on the Iceman attack twice end at the to the right of the goalie, if the goalie's standing there looking out toward the ice. That door popped open during the game on Saturday. Cody Beach hit somebody, and the door just popped open, and they spilled out onto the concrete, which got everyone's attention, obviously, and it was a big ooh-ah moment. But that's dangerous. That's really dangerous. And if that kind of stuff keeps happening, somebody's going to get hurt. And it's people can just pass it off as this memorable thing that happened in the scope of a game, but that's something the arena has. They have to do something to make sure that doesn't happen again, because there's just no excuse for it. And that's the second time this season that that's happened with that door. And I know Joe Ernst, the ECHL supervisor of officials, was at that game. And he was sitting next to me in the press box, and when that happened, he was not happy. And I don't blame him one bit.
Yep.
Because that's the kind of stuff that just, you're putting the players in danger, and the hockey is a dangerous enough game as is. You can't have, you know, shortcomings in the rink, whereas we have soft ice that makes Todd Robinson sprain his MCL. You have a door that pops open and guys are spilling out onto the concrete when they don't expect to be, obviously. That type of stuff is just, it's inexcusable, and I hope they do something to fix it, because ultimately, if you have guys getting hurt because the building is not up to sufficient standards, then guys aren't going to want to come play here. And that could really hurt recruiting over long term if word gets out that there's issues like that.
Well, another point that I have, for years I have worked as an off-ice official for the Iceman, had a wonderful time doing it, volunteering. But this year I decided to retire and just become a fan. And one of the things that offends me is at some point the Ford Center staff has to clean the puck marks off of the glass. I mean, it is so Bush League. The Icemen are trying to sell. Those first row tickets are $47 seats,
yeah,
and you have to clean the black puck marks off of the glass.
Yeah,
Swander Ice Arena does it. I watch them do it every year. I teach a beginning hockey class for the Swander Day Camp, where all the kids go to Swander. They get to play. They melt down one of the ice surfaces. They play soccer and everything else. They go to Westman Park. They swim in Harkey Pool, and they skate. And during that shutdown period of the summer, Bill Nadeau and his crack staff over there, Ryan along with the rest of them, all of the boards get sanded and repainted. The concrete surface underneath the ice gets repainted, and all of the black marks get scraped off with a putty knife off of all the plexiglass. And here you have a beautiful $200 million stadium, and the maintenance staff can't clean black pucks off. If I was a season ticket holder paying $47 a ticket, I would have Brian Vall out there with a bottle of Windex wiping them down before every game.
Yeah, and you don't want to see that. You don't want to see Brian Vall doing manual labor.
I'd probably have him in a cute little outfit, too.
Wow. All right. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. There's so many things, and while there are a lot of them are little things, but when you see a whole pile of little things that add up, it's like, how long? I know it's only their second season at the Ford Center, but eventually stuff like this has to be fixed. And even if it's just a bunch of little stuff, little things go a long way, and players notice things, and fans notice things. And, you know, we're not in a strong enough hockey market that fans are just going to come out to games despite shortcomings, and players are going to want to play here despite shortcomings. So everything needs to be absolutely as perfect as it can possibly be. And, you know, the Ford Center has a role in that. It's not just the Iceman organization that can make things pitch perfect. The arena has to bring their A game too. And part of it too, and this, I don't know how many people even noticed this, but what happened to the Canadian flag? I think it's come and gone 3 or 4 times in a year and a half now. I don't know what's so difficult about get a Canadian flag. It's supposed to be the same size as the American flag, and it's supposed to fly at the same height. Just put it up and be done with it.
Is that an ECHL requirement, or is that just the
Evansville
standard that diplomacy it's supposed to, thing? I don't know.
I think it's part of the flag code. Like any nation's flag is supposed to be flown at the same importance as the American flag. Which is why, you know, if you go to Detroit or somewhere that's near the border where they will fly both flags, they're always flying at the same height. But I guess you don't have to worry about flying them at the same height if we don't have a Canadian flag.
Well, that's what I was referring to is, do you know, we don't sing because We don't have any Canadian teams in the ECHL.
Right, we don't.
We don't do the Canadian national anthem,
right.
Whereas in the NHL, if one of those teams is playing, it's sung, which makes you wonder. I mean, 25% of the NHL is now European, so
right.
When do we start breaking out the Russian song,
yeah.
the Russian national anthem, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
Here
know.
Go on another tangent again.
I don't know if the ECHL says you don't have to have the Canadian flag because we don't have Canadian teams, but... You know, if we never had it at the get-go and it's never shown up, I'd be like, all right, fine, we just don't have a Canadian flag. But it's been there before.
Yeah.
We didn't have it at first. It showed up. Then it disappeared. And then at this season, it was there at the start of the season, I think, too. And then it disappeared again. It's like, is there some Canadian thief that really wants the only Canadian flag in Evansville? I don't know. It's odd.
No comment.
Oh, I see. Do you have a new bedspread for your bed at home or something?
Ivy, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
Yes. Oh, you've just been thrown under the bus.
Iceman trivia.
This is, I think, an interesting but also ultimately sad, which I'll get to in a minute, piece of trivia. Jared Lavender, one of the new additions for the Iceman, he signed a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and he didn't have any points this weekend. He doesn't have any points yet, but he's solid. I like him. He's the guy that we brought over from Quad City in the CHL. He is the third black player in the history of the Iceman, this being our fifth season overall. So he is the third black player we've had. Can you name the previous two?
I cannot. But so are you going to, or
we're
going
to
send
no.
it to Iceman, Iceman Maniacs for the answer?
No, actually, I do have the answers, and I will share them. The first player... the first.
I don't have them because my sheet's all mysteriously blackened out over here.
Yeah. I'm not just going to give you the answers. The first black player we ever had was Alex Motley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Little
scrappy dude. He was about 5'6" on skates. Played 13 games for the Iceman during the inaugural AHA season.
Yes. I think he wore number 14, if I...
Boy, I don't remember that. I don't know what jersey number he wore, but he was popular. I think people
speedy,
liked him. He was one of those speedy little guys that just buzzed around the ice, kind of like a Brian Bisek type player almost. I don't think he was as skilled, but he was that kind of fun little dude to watch. But yeah, he was the first black player in the history of the Iceman, and the sad part of this is I didn't realize this until I was searching out this trivia. He died. This past summer, in June, he had actually stopped playing. He had retired as a player, and he was coaching midget hockey in California, which, for people that aren't familiar with youth hockey, that's like high school age kids. It's not actually little people.
Yeah.
But he was coaching midget hockey out in California, which is where he was raised. He was originally born in Puerto Rico, but he was raised in California. So he was coaching midgets out there, and apparently one day in June they were doing dry land training outside, and he collapsed and could not be revived.
Oh my God!
So he was only 38 years old. So rest in peace, Alex Motley. That's, to my knowledge, that's the first former Iceman player that's passed away. And when it happened, I guess nobody around here heard about it. But yeah, I found that in looking for this because I was going back through the rosters trying to, because I remembered we had a black player the first season, and I couldn't think of his name off the top of my head. And I looked down the roster, and I saw Alex Motley. I said, I think that's it. So I did a Google search for him, and the first thing that came up was this story about his obituary. And I was like, that can't be the same Alex Motley. And then I read it and realized it was. So, sad news. But
it is surprising that you would expect of anyone, C.J. Schneider, probably to be the first to pass. But he seems to be born under a lucky star.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Alex Motley was our first black player. Our second black player was last season, Maxime Boisclair.
Okay.
Who we had at the very end of the season. He played a few games in the regular season and in the playoffs.
Big dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked him, too. He was one of those guys that I wouldn't have minded seeing come back this year, but I think he's playing in Europe this year. But anyway, Motley was born in Puerto Rico, and Boisclair was actually born in Haiti. He's Haitian. So even though Lavender is our third black player, he's actually our first African-American because he was born in Ohio. So so he's the third black player and the first African-American in Iceman history. So
I also did some in-audience research during the game Saturday night, and I asked a couple of girls what name is less sissy lavender or foam, and like if they had to choose one of them to be their boyfriend, and they, you know, like the girls wore their jersey, would they rather be Miss Lavender or Miss Foam? And they chose Lavender as the cooler name.
Yeah, I think at least Lavender, it's like it's kind of unusual and it's a unique color, but I don't know how you can dress up foam.
No, foam is just foam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah,
that's it back to me.
I don't know where to go from there. We have no transition from Lavender and Foam to what we're talking about next.
You're listening to Iceman Insights on 96.9 The Wire with Michael Shockley, senior writer of IcemanManiacs.com, and myself, the Dirty D. We had another jersey auction. That Star Wars jersey was fantastic.
I
don't know how much it cost the Iceman to do all that, but seeing Evil Empire up on the billboard, or up, not the billboard, but on the big screen when we scored goals, I just wanted to take a lightsaber and just start slashing people. That was awesome. Well done, Iceman.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I liked the jerseys. I know there were some people that weren't in love with the jerseys that didn't necessarily think they were perhaps as creative as they could have done with the Star Wars theme. But I thought they were pretty cool. I thought the nicest touch was the changed logo.
Yes.
That the logo, instead of an Iceman holding a stick, it looked like a white Darth Vader.
No, basically. It was a snowtrooper.
Oh, was it?
It's a snowtrooper.
I never saw it up close.
Back.
Ah!
Yeah, so you had the stormtroopers in Episode 4, and then the fifth one when they invade Hoth. You got to be warm in your plastic armor, so you have
gotcha.
A longer helmet.
So okay. Yes, it was I didn't look at it that
Imperial
closely.
Imperial snowtrooper.
I just enjoyed that they actually changed the logo, and it actually said Evil Empire on the logo, too.
Ah.
So that was, I agree, the Evil Empire was a nice touch. But, the jerseys, they auctioned them off for 911 Gives Hope, which is a great cause. And they raised a total of $14,550, which is an average of $606 per jersey. The Pink the Rink jersey auction, the last one, raised a little bit more. It raised just over $15,000 and about $700 per jersey. But the top getters this time, Matt Jens' jersey went for $1,050.
Take that, younger brother.
Yeah, that was way up. His Pink the Rink one went for $725. Josh Bowie was second at $1,025. That was also way up. His Pink the Rink went for $600. Todd Robinson went for $1,000. Aaron Jens and $750. Phil Plant went for $725. Romador went for $675, which I was joking with Derek Masterson after the game that the two goals that he gave up late in that game probably cost his jersey about $300.
Shutout.
Yeah, if you get a shutout, you're going to be getting $1,000 for your jersey, but those two goals hurt him. But at the other end of the spectrum, I thought it was interesting. The cheapest jersey was Stefan Dellarovere at $425, which if you throw goalies out of the mix, I think of all the other players that were in the auction, he probably has the most legit chance of being a solid NHL player at some point. So that jersey, whoever won that, could end up being quite a bargain, because if he makes it to the NHL, that could have some nice resale value down the line at some point. But I was not necessarily surprised to see Matt Jens take the top spot. Not only is he a popular player, but his jersey had an added little piece of novelty to it in that Matt's jersey has the Captain C on the front, which whenever Todd comes back, he won't anymore. So that's just a handful of games that Matt has a C, and it happened to coincide with the jersey auction. So that's an interesting little bit of novelty. But Medora, I thought it was cool. After his jersey was auctioned, he actually took the mic from the auctioneer guy and thanked the fans for coming out and said, "We appreciate your support." So I thought that was kind of neat, because all the other guys just stood there and obviously modeled their jerseys, and then when it was done, they walked off. But Medora actually made a point to grab the microphone and thank everybody for coming out and thank for the support. So that was cool. He was also quite a character during the auction. He was like doing this weird Vanna White posing and spinning with his jersey and just being a goofball. But
goalies.
Yeah, goalies are weird. We've said it before. We'll say it again. I thought it was also funny but sad. At the start of the auction, the guy from Sohn & Associates that was running the auction said, "We like to do these things after baseball games and hockey matches." Ugh. Like, ugh, hockey matches.
Because we're like tennis.
Yeah, jeez.
Shorts.
Yeah, it's just sad. It's like the people that think there's halftime in a hockey game. And I heard something else along those same lines on Saturday, I think it was, there was an usher that was directing some people toward one of the suites, and they said, you just walk around that corner, and it's about halfway around. You're going to like your seat. Your suite is right at half court.
It is a basketball town.
It's like,
it just is.
Where is the court? I'm sorry. I believe this is a hockey game. But, yeah, that's kind of the wrap-up of the jersey auction, another $14,000 plus, and I think all or half the proceeds or something went to 9-1-1 Gives Hope. So at least a few hundred dollars, and that's a great cause. People that aren't familiar with it need to go to the 9-1-1 Gives Hope website, which I'm not sure. I think it's 911giveshope.org. Just search 9-1-1 Gives Hope. It's an excellent cause, and it's good that we raise some money for them.
Now, I don't see Jim McKenzie's name on this anywhere, and is that because he got the boot for the game, one game suspension through the ECHL for breaking one of the standard rules of hockey nowadays?
Yeah, he did not play in the game on Saturday, and I don't know if they actually had a McKenzie jersey or not. I would imagine they probably did. Vogelhuber's jersey was not auctioned off either, but apparently there was one. So I don't know if it's a case of there were a couple that they didn't auction off that a sponsor wanted or something. I'm not sure. I know in the past there have been cases where there's a presenting sponsor for the special one-night-only jerseys, and sometimes that sponsor gets a couple jerseys. So it's quite possible that they did exist and they just weren't auctioned off because somebody wanted them before. You know, they probably didn't expect those jerseys to necessarily draw a whole lot, so they didn't think there was much harm in it. Although there were a few people that were upset that Vogelhuber's was not, so maybe they left a few hundred dollars on the table there. But there also was not an Anton Blomqvist jersey because his number 55 was repurposed for Cody Beach. So I think those were the only three guys that didn't have jerseys, McKenzie, Blomqvist, and Vogelhuber. I think everybody else was. There were a lot more in this auction than there were in the last auction, so just because of all the injuries and everything.
Yep, we haven't seen – did McKenzie play on Sunday?
No.
Okay. So we still haven't seen him play yet. He was suspended. He started a fight in the Cincinnati Friday, right?
Yeah. At the very end, there was like 8 seconds left in the game, and he instigated. And which that's a standard rule in hockey. Yep. Yeah, you get the automatic game misconduct and the one-game suspension. So, yeah, he didn't play Saturday, and then I guess probably because we won on Saturday, Rich just decided not to change the lineup for Sunday. So,
or maybe because he had the opportunity not to change the lineup and still have 16 skaters and two goalies.
It's amazing. We'll play the same lineup twice in a row. I think that's only the third time this season that's happened. We've never gone beyond two games, so maybe we can do that this time. Who knows? Probably not with the recent transaction, so we'll reset the clock again and start at one. Speaking of Jim McKenzie, you mentioned last week that the name sounded familiar to you because, and it turns out, as you found out, that you recognized our Jim McKenzie because he played college at Michigan State. But the Jim McKenzie name might sound familiar to other people because there was also a Jim McKenzie that played in the NHL. He actually played 880 games. He was a fisticuffs kind of guy, and he had over 1,700 penalty minutes. He actually won the Stanley Cup with the New Jersey Devils in 2003. And he actually is now retired from hockey, and he's coaching the Muskegon Lumberjacks in the USHL Junior League, which obviously Muskegon is the team that when they were pro moved here and technically became the Icemen when
we
moved
stole
to LA. Yeah.
With our money.
Right. So that was kind of the interesting background on why Jim McKenzie sounded familiar. You had a reason why he sounded familiar to you, but that was not why he sounded familiar to me. I remembered the Jim McKenzie that played for the Devils, so hopefully he can follow in the other Jim McKenzie's footsteps and end up winning a Stanley Cup. That'd be pretty nice.
Or he can follow in the footsteps of Bob and Doug McKenzie from back in the 80s and 90s and just say hoser a lot and make us all laugh hysterically.
Excellent, yes.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Stanley Cup. I'm
Stanley
fine
Cup
with
or hoser.
Hoser.
Yeah.
Either end of the spectrum.
I think hoser's probably more realistic. To tie up another loose end, last week we were also talking about how Stefan Della Rovere's name is Italian for of the oak, and you mentioned that somebody's name that we had meant Greenwood, and I looked it up, and it was Eric Boisvert.
See, did you have to look it up? Because I didn't. I remembered
I didn't.
I just remembered it two
you
days later.
You remembered it later, yeah. I had to look it up because I couldn't, but when I saw the name, I recognized, Boisvert is French for Greenwood. So I guess that's technically the French version of the last name Greenwood. So his name was Eric Greenwood. And then we have Stephen of the Oak, who has now been called up. But on the topic of names, the weird thing is, despite all the roster turnover we had this year, with seemingly every hockey player known to man playing for the Icemen at some point, we still have not had a Schneider.
Yeah.
We're in danger.
Yes, the streak could be broken.
Yeah.
5 years of Schneiders.
Yeah, we had C.J. Schneider in the first season, and then T.J. Schneider the year after that, and then Nick Schneider the 2 years in the CHL. So yeah, this we've had 4 years in a row, and this is our fifth season, and we haven't had a Schneider yet. So Crom's going to have to get on that. Yeah. We've got to sign a Schneider at some point this year, or the streak will be broken.
So people need to get out there and start searching for available CHL and ECHL level talent, last name Schneider.
I'm sure some people would probably just like to see Nick come back.
Ah, that is always a possibility, potentially. Yeah,
never know, with all the injuries on D. Yep. But yeah, and also one last loose end I wanted to tie up. Last week at the end of the show, we had this cliffhanger ending where I got shot by arrows. Would you care to explain how that happened?
I have a young archer, 5-year-old Ivy McKenna, and she just, you'd think she's all princess, but with the Merida movie and Chronicles of Narnia, she loves archery, and she has a real bow, and she also has the fake old cowboy and Indian suction cup arrows, and she likes to carry it around everywhere. And at the end of the show, Michael Shockley, who has become quite the celebrity in multiple households due to his coming on the radio show here down at the Wired Coffee House, but you got riddled like a porcupine with a bunch of arrows.
Yeah, it was very painful.
And then this week, Ivy has left the bow and arrows behind for the digital camera, and I think we've had about 75 pictures taken of us during the show.
Yeah, I'm still seeing spots from all the flashes.
Yeah, I finally got that stopped without letting the audience know. So you want to talk a little bit about the Iceman, Ivy? Go ahead, speak in the microphone.
Oh, now she gets all...
Yeah. Why don't you tell everyone about your new shoes?
I like my new shoes.
What do they do?
Flat light up. They're so cool. My grandmother tried to make me resist from them.
But you got them anyways because grandfather's a sucker, isn't he?
Yeah.
All right, back to hockey.
Breaking news. Grandfather's a sucker.
Tonight, Cincinnati, we travel to Cincinnati. I think this is three of the last four Wednesdays we have traveled to Cincinnati on a Wednesday night. I wonder what their attendance is like over there.
Not very good. Last Wednesday, they only had like 1,800.
Yeah, that's tough night to sell out. But hopefully, we beat them 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then
the first time.
Yep, and then we got shelled last week, but hopefully things will be better tonight.
Yeah, hopefully. That's a good team. They're 12-5-2. They started out really hot. They were the last team in the league to lose their first game. They've sort of cooled off a little bit, but they're still that's a talented team. So that's not going to be an easy task, but hopefully the Icemen can ride some momentum from these two wins at home and go take care of business.
And I think they've got McDonald and McClellan on that club, and one of them was the first overall pick for the Ontario Hockey League for juniors.
Really?
So when the Bantam Age kids, when they, when Sidney Crosby goes first and everything else like that, but
right.
He was the first overall pick. They're very excited about him, and he's stung the Iceman. I think he had the 2 goals on Friday.
Wow. The way the last couple games went, I think everyone stung the Iceman.
But
in those games.
He's the one that had the wraparound goal at the end of the night, and they are very high on him because of being a first overall pick for the OHL. Bantam draft and now coming to Cincy. So they got a young kid, as well as being a good team, they got a young kid who's up and coming as well.
Yeah, hopefully we can slow him and the rest of that team down, because you'd like to get a victory over a team like that to keep this little streak going and continue the momentum, because we have two more home games after the game tonight. Friday, the Icemen play Toledo at home. Toledo's good, too. They're 13-8-1, but the Icemen have beat them both times the two teams have played.
As predicted by myself.
That's true.
Both times.
Yes. And also, we need to give ourselves credit. Our prediction of the fifth straight win on Saturday was legitimate.
That's what I was... Whoa, it's our prediction now?
Well, I think...
It was your stat.
It was my stat, and then you tried to steal it. And if I was going to get thrown under the bus if it was wrong, I believe I get credit for bringing it up in the first place.
That's not how this show works. I believe that. We'll have to re-listen to last week's show,
which you can
do at IcemanManiacs.com.
That's true, yeah. You can go back and listen to how it all went down in the first place. But, the Icemen play Toledo on Friday at home. There have not been any promotions announced for that game, so I don't know that there's anything special.
Maybe they'll bring Berserk back for you.
Oh, boy. Yeah, let's not say we did. That was atrocious. Yeah, I'm if I can't say anything nice, I'm not going to say anything at all.
Unless it's about the Ford Center maintenance.
Yeah, we'll throw them under the bus. I'm not going to throw mascots under the bus, though. But, yeah, so nothing on the, on tap Friday special. But then Saturday, the Icemen play the Cincinnati Cyclones for the first time at home this season.
Yes,
this, we will have played four games there, but this is the first time they're actually coming here. And Saturday is the annual teddy bear toss for 911 Gives Hope. And this is one of my favorite promotions every year. I love it. Teddy bear tosses are huge in other places, in the Western Hockey League and juniors, in Calgary and in Portland, Oregon. They do enormous teddy bear tosses. They've the last few years, they keep swapping back and forth the record for the most animals collected. And they're both getting over 20,000 animals every time they do it.
And you've posted videos before on IceManiacs.com. You got to watch it. And I think they just did one. One of the teams just did
one. Hershey just did
one. Okay, and they had 24,000.
Yeah, they. I didn't watch it yet. They had a bunch. And it's such a cool. Obviously, we're not to that point where we have that many yet. But you know, even if you only get 1,000 of them, it's just it's a wonderful cause. For people that don't know what it is, you bring stuffed animals. It doesn't have to be a teddy bear, but you bring stuffed animals to the game, and then when the Icemen score their first goal, you throw them out on the ice, and then they collect them and they clean them up and make sure they're all good to go, and then they give them to 911 Gives Hope, which then takes them to area hospitals and gives them to kids that are stuck in hospitals during the holidays. So it's a wonderful cause. I think last year, I don't know how many we had, but there was four or five very large garbage bags that were just filled up, and this is the fourth year I think that we've done it, and it gets a little bit bigger every year. And obviously, we got a long way to go to get to 20,000, but
yeah,
but and we'll probably never get there. But
seems how those buildings probably hold 18,000.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, they attract 18,000 people for junior hockey in Calgary, and when you have that many people, you can get a lot more critters. But about this one, I did want to say, I mentioned this on Facebook in the Maniac Asylum. If you're stuck for how to get stuffed animals, you know, maybe you don't want to go to Walmart and pay $7 for one stuffed animal. You don't have to buy something new. Go to a place like Goodwill or another consignment shops, anything like that, a secondhand type place. You can get stuffed animals that are in good shape for cheap. And a couple years ago when we were doing this at Swander, my wife, Manna, and I went to one of the Goodwill stores here in Evansville, and we bought a garbage bag full of stuffed animals for like $8 and threw them all out on the ice. And basically, you don't have to have overly high standards. Just as long as something is clean and in good shape, consider if you would buy it for your own kid or for, you know, your niece or nephew or whatever, then it's good enough to buy and help brighten the day of some kid who's stuck in a hospital during the holidays, which is the last place a kid wants to be.
So again, tonight Cincinnati, Friday Toledo, Saturday night Cincy comes to town. Friday and Saturday are both at home, and that Cincy game is the teddy bear toss. Final thoughts, vote for Brad.
Yeah, vote for Brad. It's gotten a lot of play on Facebook and otherwise and at home games, and we're trying to send Brad Perkins, Mr. Crazy Cowbell guy, to the ECHL All-Star Game. The league is having their 25th anniversary season, so they're having their 25th fan-iversary contest. And whoever is voted by ECHL fans as the biggest fan in the league wins an all-expenses-paid trip to Loveland, Colorado in January, which is that's where you want to go in January, is someplace
yeah.
as cold like Colorado. But
it's a different kind of cold because they don't have any humidity.
That's true, yeah. And you can go skiing while you're there.
Yep.
But, yeah. And
Brad's planning on taking his kids, so
yeah.
He really wants to take
And apparently he's never been on an airplane before.
Ah.
So, I don't know.
Brad hasn't or the boy hasn't?
Apparently Brad hasn't.
Ah.
I'm not sure. I could be wrong
about
that.
Well, they might not let him fly with his face all painted up. And,
that's true.
And trying to get that cowbell through the metal detector.
TSA might have a problem with this. But, yeah, they're... There are seven or eight different options. The main rival for Brad so far in the voting has been a couple of girls from Stockton, the Stockton Thunder, which I think it's cheating to begin with, that every other entry is one individual, and yet Stockton was able to have two girls in the same video. And I think that's not fair to begin with because they can pool their resources to get more votes, but...
Are you basically saying they're prostitutes?
No, I'm not. Because
okay.
I don't
I just
know.
Wanted to clarify.
I don't know that they're of age, so I don't want.
Oh,
I really don't want to imply that.
I haven't checked that video yet.
No, I don't
Maybe
know.
I should have done a little research before that.
That statement?
Crass.
Yeah. I don't know how old they are, but I think there's some sort of collusion going on, because it seems like every time Brad gets close, all of a sudden their vote spikes about 100. And something fishy going on here. So go to IcemanManiacs.com. Right at the top of the homepage, there is a link that says Vote Brad. If you click that, it'll take you to the Facebook page where you can vote. And it's important, don't just go to that page. Going to that page is not a vote. You actually have to click on the page, and then once you're there, you have to be logged into your Facebook account, and then you can vote for Brad. And hopefully we can send him to the All-Star Game, and kind of a nice little reward for all the work he's done. Brad's one of those guys that he'll talk about the Iceman everywhere he goes and does a lot of great things to try to help spread the word and grow hockey in Evansville, just like you and I do, and give him some credit and try to help give him a big thank you in the form of a free vacation. That'd be really nice.
That would be fantastic. I love the games that I haven't been able to go down to the Ford Center and the Iceman score a goal, and you can hear the Brad yelling out the da-da-da-da.
Hey,
you suck.
Yeah.
Manual cheer.
Yeah, since the team changed the goal song, he's been leading that, and it's getting louder and louder every night.
And you can hear it over the radio on ice microphone, so that's always fantastic.
That's pretty awesome. Also, one other thing I wanted to mention here at the end was Brian Patafi was not on the amusement park last week.
No, he's too cool now.
Yeah.
I guess we've launched him into this whole new radio career.
Yeah.
He will never make TV, but radio is still good.
Yeah, he missed the show last week, and when I talked to him on Saturday, he said, see you on the radio. I was like, you can't see on the radio.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, so I guess that could be our new closing statement is whenever we sign off, be like, all right, everybody, see you on the radio.
Well, see you on the radio. I like it.
Yeah.
So even if he is too good for us now, at least we can steal that line from him.
Right, exactly. He will live on in infamy. But yeah, that's basically all I had. I did want to mention also, we were talking about 911 Gives Hope being a great cause. You won't toot your own horn, but for those who can't see, since you can't see on the radio, Mr. Benigni here chopped off his long, curly locks since our last show, and he's
Thank got God.
The shortest hair I've seen in probably ever since I've known you. But
it was short the very first, the AHA season.
Really?
Yep. I had cut it back in that, like, November or something like that, and started growing it out from there. So my hair has grown as our relationship has grown.
Yes. Oh, Lord. But yeah, you chopped it off and donated it to Locks of Love, which is where I was going. That's another excellent cause. So
definitely.
So good for you. Hopefully you're not like, is it Samson that chopped off his hair and lost his strength?
He lost his strength, but that was because of a woman. Well. And there's no women around here.
Well.
In my life, other than my five-year-old, which is all I need, except for when she crawls all over me doing a radio broadcast. It takes pictures of us and blinds us.
Yeah,
so,
you'll have that.
You game tonight against Cincinnati away and then home this weekend. Ford Center, we hope to see everyone out there. His name is Michael Shockley. He joins us from IcemanManiacs.com. He is the senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. All of the potential information you could ever need about hockey or the Iceman can be found there.
And for how to vote for Brad.
And how to vote for Brad. So, thank you all for listening to Iceman Insights.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.